the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
So welcome to Right Side Up Podcast with me, Danielle, and James Scholl, and a special guest this week, Joash Thomas. Joash, hey. Please, it's such an honor to have you here. Please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you and where you're coming from and why on earth you want to come on our podcast to talk about Ted Lasso.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. This is great, Danielle and James. So great to be here. So my name is Joash Thomas. I live in Toronto. I work for International Justice Mission Canada as our National Director of Mobilization and Advocacy, get to lead our church partnerships and our government advocacy. But I'm here today as myself, as Joash Thomas, just representing myself, not the views of anyone I affiliate with. And always good to throw that disclaimer.
So just in case anyone from IGM is listening, he's not representing that. This is just him.
Mostly for the Americans, you know, like it's hard sometimes for folks to separate, identities, but glad to be here. And I was born and raised in Mumbai, India. I've spent, much of my adulthood in the States. And relatively new Canadian. So I feel like I'm from everywhere and nowhere at the same time. Thanks for having me.
You know, what's fun, I just realized, is I'm like fully Canadian. Joash, you are Indian American.
Yeah.
Is that fair? And then just like new to Canada. And then James, you're UK, fully UK, but kind of we've adopted you here in Canada because, well, we had to, we're the Commonwealth.
Yeah, that's right. They just welcomed me in with all the moms. I was like, showed them a picture of the Queen.
That's right. So Ted Lasso is what we're talking about. And I just kind of put together that a lot of the Ted Lasso sort of recipe of the show is this American culture meeting a UK culture and the differences between them. So that's an interesting, just in light of where we're all from and our own cultural backgrounds, that's kind of fun. And I wonder how that is in terms of our reflections of the show. So tell me, first of all, Joash, why, like I found out you wanted to talk about this and it was on our list in our season where we're talking about God at the movies and faith in media.
Yeah.
And it was on our list for sure. And then you had tweeted, oh, hey, why is no one talking about Ted Lasso? And then I was like, dude, come, we're talking about Ted Lasso and faith and all things. Yeah. What was your, like, why'd you tweet that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been watching Ted Lasso mostly by myself, and I've just been seeing these theological themes, you know, these deep, profound theological and philosophical themes all throughout the show, all throughout all three seasons, I guess. And you know, so Twitter can sometimes be a helpful place to kind of process things online where you wouldn't get to process, you know, things that you wouldn't get to process with your real life circles, I guess. So just thought I'd throw this one out there and see if anyone else is feeling how I feel. Like, are you seeing God in this particular movie, I guess? And it turns out a lot of us are. And everyone just has such unique reflections. And like you just said, Danielle, reflections that reflect our culture and our upbringing and the beauty in that, right? And so it's just been a lot of fun getting to learn from brothers and sisters like you, and excited to have this conversation.
James, what are your origin thoughts on Ted Lasso? And do you want to give us just a quick, like 2 minute catch up on what it's about so people can track with us if they haven't seen the show?
Sure. I mean, I think the genesis of this was an SNL skit or something along those lines, but it's essentially this American college football coach is hired for some reason as a, what y'all Americans will say soccer, what I would call football, but we'll say, I'll go with the parlance of our times, is hired to become a soccer coach in the UK. And, you know, so there's lots of this kind of fish out of water comedy. There's lots of trying to understand the differences in culture. I love watching this because it reminds me of home, I suppose. Although there's definitely pieces in it where they kind of cater to the American audiences. Occasionally the English people will say something like, well, you don't say it like that in England, but you know, that's a minor detail, essentially. So it kind of follows this coach who is kind of despised by everyone to begin with, because he's not proven himself. You know, he only knows about American football, so what would he know about soccer? And the kind of the series is gradually him, I'd say, winning people over for all intents and purposes. I think that's reductive, but ultimately, and you see the way these different relationships play out with these different people that have lots against him for, I would argue, valid reasons, actually, and understandable reasons. But we, I don't know, I'm sure both of you want to speak more to this, but we see this kind of just persistent optimism and grace, but also a vulnerability in places, which really, really affected me. There's one episode in particular where I had to like take it to my counsel. I had a lot of feelings that I'm not used to having because of this TV show. And, wow. I like a good British person. I don't admit to having feelings ever. Like you buckle them down and then you don't feel them and then it all goes away in the end. Probably.
James, can I interrupt and just reverse a little bit there? You said they hold things against him for valid reasons. Can you explain that? Is it just
he doesn't know what he's doing, I guess.
Ignorance, they're holding his ignorance against him. Don't you think though, and this is, I'm asking you about this from England, is there a general anti-American sort of sentiment in England?
I think there's an anti-everyone sentiment in England, to be honest with you.
Felt that way as a Canadian.
We like Canadians. I'd say we like Canadians. But yeah, I would say anti-American is strong. I think lots of people have some beautiful ideas of America. And obviously there are lots of positive things about America. Well, we're really getting into it now, aren't we? But there's also some concerning things about America, which I think are kind of on display for the rest of the world to see. And that kind of weird infectious optimism. I think America is often optimistic, even though it shouldn't be. And England is often very cynical, even though it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of see those clashes at times, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think he doesn't really know what he's doing. I think that's the reason people don't like him. And yeah, just in general, what's this Yank doing over here? They don't know anything about soccer, which probably is the prevailing sentiment in England, if we're honest.
Yeah, well, that's just true.
Yeah,
but I do like that idea of the clash of cultures in the optimistic, you know, everything's gonna be fine, and the happy clappy sort of generalized version of American worldview. And then this English, you know, very older, cynical, sort of, I would say almost pessimistic, what do they say? Taking the piss out of everybody, right? Isn't that on the show? Taking the piss out of everybody. Yeah,
that is correct.
And so these cultures sort of are clashing, expectations are clashing. The game of soccer or football is so different than the game of American football. So that's clashing. So there's all these kind of clashes happening. I feel like Ted Lasso in his own life is clashing in terms of he's going through his own maybe remaking. And so everything's new for him. So it's also just really like a fish out of water, but also in his life, he's starting again in some ways. And so anyway, there's all these, and I feel like that itself, just the setup for the show is, a lot of what I feel like culture is feeling. There's a lot of clashing and there's a lot of worldviews clashing. There's a lot of expectations clashing. There's a lot of fish out of water feelings going on, or even assumptions about how people are and who they are. And so part of the show, I think part of its allure is the surprising nature of it. It doesn't unfold the way we think it should. Anyway, I think that just the setup of the show is helpful that way.
Are the parts that jumped out to you, Josh, that I may not have picked up on? Because again, it's interesting. We all kind of see these things in different ways and different parts jump out to us, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with this. And, you know, I think to Danielle's point, this is, you know, profoundly impactful for the times that we're in. You know, one constant theme that I see throughout the show is the theme of life and death, you know, and I think a good categorization of this would be their star striker, Danny Rojas, and his standard line, football is life, football is life. And then at the beginning of season two, hopefully I'm not spoiling this for anyone. This was last season. Hopefully you caught up by now. But at the beginning of season two, you know where this is going. He kicks the ball and hits a dog, and the poor dog dies. And then at that point, Danny says, football is death. And so, you know, I think that's when his team coaches know that he needs help that's beyond them. So they bring in another coach, Dr. Sharon, to provide specialized, you know, psychotherapy services as a sports psychologist. And yeah, and then, you know, eventually at the end of that season, you see that redemption narrative for him where he scores that goal and it goes in and he's back to yelling football is life again, right? And so I think there's this constant theme of life and death that's throughout the show that's that I also think is beautiful considering the fact that the show came out during the pandemic in a culture of death where death was surrounding us and had a deep mental emotional impact on us, and here was this ray of hope talking about life. You know, and I think this is the beauty with Ted Lasso's character too. In so many ways, he reminds me of Jesus, right? I think he's the avatar of Jesus in pop culture in many ways. Of course, you know, Jesus is perfect. Ted Lasso is not. So notwithstanding that, but, you know, in many ways, he reminds me of Jesus because just like Jesus, everything that Ted Lasso touches comes to life. Mm-hmm. Right? Like everyone, everything and everyone he touches, whether it's an angry captain, prima donna players, you know, his coaching team, a dead soccer club.
Jaded reporters.
Yes, jaded reporters. Yeah. Thank you. Duplicitous boss. Everything he touches comes from death to life. And I think that's the thesis of the show, essentially. It's, you know, everything eventually comes from death to life with the right team. And, you know, I think that's beautiful.
I was thinking, you know, one of the great, and this is maybe part of a desire that's in culture, I think right now, is just for someone to be good. Mm-hmm. I think we've exhausted, like, I know I'm totally at my threshold of like discovering one more, you know, person I thought was good that isn't good, you know, like, and just that like nonstop seeming crash of like our expectations for humanity and particularly male and maybe even particularly white men to be bad. There's kind of this prevailing, and you don't want it to be true. Like, it's not like I'm like, oh, it's a, but I can feel even in my own life and my own heart, this like fear around, you know, so even as the show goes on, I will say I was really relieved by the end of the second season and then into the third, but like, I kept waiting for him not to be good. I really did. Cause I was like, oh, I don't know if I could take that. Like, I don't know if I could take it. And so there's something I think that's connecting to the desire of people for someone to be good. And I think that's beautiful because not only does that, I agree with the Ted Lasso has a lot of qualities of Jesus where he's life-giving. He thinks about what's really important versus what the immediate expectations are. He goes deep with people in relationship. He serves well. He's kind. He refuses to return, you know, evil for evil. So there's like all these kind of things that are very Christ type like. But also, I just really think I'm just starved for a character, and in real life too, but even on television, who is just a good man. And that to me was just like water for my soul.
Yeah, absolutely. And I relate with you so much, Danielle, especially as a person of color who's been constantly let down by white American men so much and feels constantly let down over the past many years. You know, I think the question at the back of my head with every episode is, can I really trust you? Will you also let me down? Right. And you see time and time again that, of course, he's not perfect, but he's genuinely trying his best. And yeah. And, you know, he builds the right team around him. So even when he gets hit with a panic attack or a personal crisis, something that he can't control, the rest of the team can, you know, take it forward from there. And I think there's beauty and a beautiful leadership lesson in that as well.
Yeah, I think Ted's vulnerability is one of the great, and I think James, you were talking about this earlier, but his vulnerabilities, like the willingness for him to admit his weakness and get help and acknowledge when he's been wrong. You know, like you see these things that you're like, oh, you could just do that. Like, you don't have to pretend. You don't remember when the media, so he has panic attacks and he's ashamed of it, of course. And the media make a big thing of it that he doesn't have what it takes and he can't play this. And of course, all the impulse of every club and every manager and every coach would be to like steal up and be like, that's not what that was, and cover it up. And, you know, we see this happen over and over again. And instead, of course, in Ted fashion, he just owns it and owns it publicly and owns it privately and walks it through. And then he becomes this thing that could have been what everybody expected it to be, this like thing that would do him in, ends up being this wonderful thing for people to live deeper and learn from his example and start getting help for their own things that were going on in their own life. So it becomes this catalyst for a different kind of coaching, a different kind of team. And I think that's one of the most beautiful. So this part of what makes him good is not that he's perfect, but that he's honest. And that he's open and that he's vulnerable and that as he makes mistakes, he's willing to correct them right away. And, you know, he tells the truth instead of covering up. He's not pretending to be something he isn't. And all that is part of that goodness that I think we're all longing for.
I think combining, again, we say vulnerability and even those flaws, but with that desire to be good. And I think that if we think that most movies about a kind of clear good and evil are Marvel movies right now, which Marvel movies are great, no problem with Marvel movies, but again, they're comic books, that's okay. They're not designed to be some kind of blazing critique of 21st century culture, but it means there's very little nuance, right? The good guys are good, the bad guys are bad, and the good guys don't even get to be weak at times, they just get to be good and be the bad guy, which is good. Like, hey, that's a great story, but I think Ted Lasso kind of answers that, as we say, that desire for someone who is both good and human. Like, it seems that we can either have someone who's human or someone who's good, and it seems combining the two feels really difficult. I think also the piece here is that the difference between, say, Marvel, who I'm just slamming now apparently, and Ted Lasso is really Ted doesn't do anything that we're not able to do, right? Like, I don't have a spacesuit, I can't go, I don't have a mech, but I can be generous and think the best of people. There's an episode where he gets into that bet and beats the bad guy at darts. It's a whole thing, if you've said it, you know what I'm talking about. And he just says, like, the importance of curiosity. And I think that is so important. I've preached out of that like multiple times now, but what does it look like for us to be curious as people, to ask questions rather than make any assumptions? And I think it all comes out of that vulnerability and like, okay, I don't know everything, so tell me, like, I want to know more, I want to understand.
That is hands down the best scene in the show.
Yeah, it's also amazing. Right? I think this is where it really connects with for me, is that we're not seeing anything that we can't do. We can all be kind to the people around us. And that's really all he's doing. What's different is, I suppose, that sometimes being kind is more effective in that show than often it is in real life. Often people were kind to hurt us. But I'm jumping ahead a bit, I guess. I've been obsessing over Philippians 2 because I like to obsess over Philippians 2. It talks about Jesus having all the right, but choosing to hold on to none of it. And the idea is that, like, Jesus is so entitled, more entitled than anyone else in all of creation a billion times over, to lord his power and authority and what he has over us. Like, no one has ever been more entitled to this in the history of the world. And that's what the understanding of people at the time, when gods did become, when the Greek gods became incarnate or Hellenistic gods become incarnate, they lord it over people. They do it to exploit, they do it to destroy, they do it to like do whatever they want. Whereas when our understanding, when Jesus becomes incarnate, he instead does the exact opposite. He gives everything up. And so kind of having a coach who actually has quite a lot of power and authority, actually is willing to kind of give those pieces up, I think, again, is really inspirational. Again, I'm not like, I don't want to stress the Christ type too hard, but I do think there's some analogous pieces there that are worth exploring.
Yeah, absolutely. If I could add something to that, I think Ted exemplifies what you just said in that episode where, you know, Sam Obisanya finds out that Dubai Air's parent company, Seritium Oil, you know, is polluting his homeland, Nigeria. And, you know, he has to take the stand, to be honest to himself. His teammates have his back. He shows up in the field. It's an interesting juxtaposition because, you know, Sam, in some ways, you know, if you're looking at a spectrum of privilege, is the complete opposite of Ted Lasso, right? The black man from Africa. Ted Lasso is a white man from America. And Sam decides to take a stand to something affecting his community. And Ted Lasso, in that moment, could have centered himself. You know, there's a press conference right after where he was asked about it. But what does Ted Lasso do? He walks away from his privilege. He says, you know what? I think Sam's a better spokesperson for this. And he has something very important to say. So I'm gonna let Sam step in here. And you need to listen to what he has to say. It's just a beautiful scene. I think that's Philippians 2 personified with Ted Lasso.
Okay, start again. All right, go. I'm good.
James, what's the Women's Speaker Collective?
The Women's Speaker Collective are diverse and gifted women who are ready to unleash their voices to continue the legacy of equity, empowerment, and truth. They are committed to creating spaces for women to learn, grow, launch, and connect. If you'd like to know more, go to womenspeakercollective.com.
Yeah, that's what the Women's Speaker Collective is.
Take eight.
So we want to mention the Women's Speaker Collective. The reason is because there's maybe never been a better time in history than for women to find and use their voice.
It seems like the first time in a very, very long while that women are being listened to, and we really want to encourage you to use your voice, to encourage you to be heard. And the Women's Speaker Collective has been doing that for a few years now. Tell us a bit about it, Danielle.
The lack of hearing from women is part of the problem. Sort of this echo chamber of men dominating microphones, dominating truth, dominating like who says what is part of the problem. So we really do want to, we want to serve women to find their voice and use their voice for the goodness of the world. So lots of ways. There's a global monthly coaching community. There's workshops. There's boot camps. One of the latest boot camps I really want to tell you about is a thing called Story Strong. This is people who have experienced trauma coming together to find their voice, to give words to their trauma, and then to learn how to tell their story in a way that doesn't harm them or harm anybody listening. And that's been a project for years in my heart that I've been longing to get to. So I'm really excited about that. That's coming next year. This would be a wonderful opportunity to gift to somebody that you know that might is in that place where they're like, they have a story to tell, but they don't know how they're going to tell it. This would be a great gift for somebody.
It's a chance to shout out to the men who are listening right now and maybe asking, what is it that I can do? And this is something that you can do. If there's a woman in your life who has the gift of speaking, thinks they might have the gift of speaking, you've discerned they have that gift of speaking but aren't quite sure what to do with it, this is a great way to get them involved and help them be heard and share their gifts with the rest of the world.
Yeah, I would also say that you can sponsor a survivor who has applied for a sponsorship. So if you want to even just be like, I want to help people tell their story because hearing from people is going to be one of the best ways we learn in this season, then you could gift that. That would also be a wonderful way to contribute to the work of liberating women's voices. So lots to do. We're glad you're doing it with us.
And head to womenspeakercollective.com.
That also is really cool too, because it was a risky thing to ask, but then the team got behind him. So again, it's this, and again, it's one of these scenarios where we're like, we all think like, we can't do that. And then the show is kind of showing, actually, it's not that hard. Like, I mean, it's hard in that you have to say no to a funder and it's like, you got to disappoint some people, but actually we could do this. We could take stands. We could stand together. We could, you know, move away from the microphone and let somebody have the moment for them to take their stand, you know, like that it can be done. And I think that's one of the great invitations of the show is like, we could live differently, even in the context of like high pressure, high competition, high level stakes. We could be different. Now, some people have criticized the show to say that it's actually not true, like, which obviously it's a fictional show, but some people have criticized the show to say like, everybody's too nice. Like, it's not real life that way. Like, it's a little bit too good in some instances. And I think the writers have tried to throw decent, you know, villains, for lack of a better word, or at least decent temptations and things into the show to like create some of that. Like, it doesn't always work out. Like that coach that Ted Lasso brought and, you know, who betrays him in the end, and there's more to come. I won't give you too much because it's the current season, but a fascinating sort of Judas like character there, and Ted Lasso's treatment of him and refusal to vilify him and all that kind of stuff. Very fascinating, beautiful possibilities there. I feel like all of the characters, one of the shows, the writing and the show itself has done a wonderful job at deepening characters. So not only Ted becomes a deeper character and we start to see some of his vulnerabilities and his background and his pain, his relationships, his brokenness, and maybe partly why he's so tender towards other people and their pain and their vulnerabilities is his own. So that's also beautiful. But I feel like some of the other characters too, that you could easily just be one dimensional or just comedy relief, which many of them are, but actually the show writes their story and their story. We start to see their background. Like Jamie is an egotistical classic, you know, showboat. I'm a survivor. I'm going to win the day. I'm the one. Look out for number one. And, you know, all the judgment that comes with that comes with that. And he acts the part totally. And everyone's just like, this guy's such a
jerk. I love that guy. Like I think he's my favorite part about this show. He's just, there are no weak performances, but Jamie Tart is perfect.
Also perfectly named, right? Even yeah, perfectly named. I was like, that guy's such a tart. And he is. Yeah, literally. But then it goes to his background. The show slowly unfolds why he's that way. And then again, Ted, as a wonderful coach figure, begins to meet him where he needs to be met. And it's such a beautiful unraveling, you know, like at a revealing of what's behind the thing, which again is one of the great invitations of the show. Is again, that I feel like that quote by Walt Whitman, that he quotes, which is be curious over judgmental, is kind of, I would say that might be the thesis of the entire show.
Yeah. I think that's so much. Sorry, Josh, you go and I'll jump in.
No, I was just going to agree. And it really, you know, the thing that really left an impression on me was watching Ted's decision-making process. So he had the choice to, you know, have Jamie join the team for just Jamie's skill and talent. And the team needed that. And he said no to Jamie's face. But then the next day, Sam talks about the relationship that he has with his father. And that reminds Ted of Jamie's broken relationship with his father. And, Ted's like, well, he needs a dad too. He needs a family too. And what you're saying is absolutely correct on the invitation to the viewer too, that hey, you can do this too, and the world doesn't have to be this way. Yes, we live in a broken world, but you can be this way, and why don't you step out in faith, but also in courage, because you when you step into being a Ted Lasso like character, you will be mocked, you will be betrayed, you will be looked down upon. Of course, that's going to happen when you lead with vulnerability. People will take advantage of that. That is the reality. We live in a broken world. But at the end of the day, the light will always still shine through, right? Like, good will still conquer evil. And I think those are beautiful messages. Yeah. Go ahead, James.
Oh, yeah. I think the question for me, and I think this is a question kind of a lot of us are hung up on, is, you know, is it... is being taken advantage of, is it being exploited, especially I think when we're in positions of authority and power. I think that's because it is important to remind ourselves, like, he is one of the people with the most power in the show, so we get to ask things of him and model ourselves on him in ways that we can't ask of marginalized people a lot of the time. So me saying, like, you just need to, like, let people, like, when I say, you know, I need to let people take advantage of me sometimes, that's true, because I need to be with vulnerable people that possibly make bad decisions and don't have a healthy idea of what relationship looks like. But I do have a good grounding, a good background, and a good set of support around me that I can absorb that. And so I need to put myself in vulnerable places. But there are also people who we can't say, well, you just need to allow people to take advantage of you, because that's been their story forever, right? So I think it's really important for us to look at this as leaders and be like, we're leaders, this is an example we need to follow. But also, don't rush to universalize that either. I think that's really important. And yeah, for me, like, okay, I'm going to be taken advantage of. Is that worth the price of admission? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, is someone maybe lying to me about why they need some help? Maybe. But, like, the worst case scenario is I've tried to help someone. Like, it's not for me necessarily to kind of make those decisions. I think that's kind of what comes up, that I think people do take advantage of Ted. People do take advantage of our generosity. But the option is to then not be generous. And, like, well, then we're just not being like Jesus. So there's no... So it's a non-starter for me.
So
I feel like that's one of the geniuses, like Ted, or of the show, is that even when Ted is taken advantage of, he seems to win. Like, and I don't mean the game, but he seems to set his sights on what his goals are, and those are different than what everybody else's goals are. And this is again where we see Jesus here, is that, like, Jesus's loss is gain. Paul figures this out eventually. Like, you can take it all, actually. And in my sacrificial co-suffering posture, I've won the kingdom. Like, this is what the win is. So I feel like the show does a little, like, pretty good at kind of tweaking. Like, they don't always win. The team doesn't always win. And but yet Ted wins because relationships have deepened, or things have been shown, or, like, you know, forgiveness has been given, or something has been deepened. And I feel like that's one of the great, not only invitations of the show, but invitations of our faith, right? Is to change what we're calling a win. Like, what does it mean to win? In the soccer, football, it means to win the match, and then to, like, win the Premier League, and then to win that match, and, you know, win money and sponsors or whatever it is. But it feels like Ted redefines what the win is. What it means to win is to be in good relationships with people, to help each other, to be kind to one another, to, like, tell the truth, to be honest, to be transparent. You know, like, all these things are his win. And so even when they're losing matches, they're winning. And I feel like that's really, we've got to reframe our lives in similar ways, because I think we get hijacked by wins that are not ours. And they're not the kingdom, and they're not Jesus's. And so we keep winning, but at the expense of actually living the way of Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to spoil the most recent episode that just dropped, like, last night. Something very similar and dynamic where they have a horrible day on the field. And, you know, that's at the beginning of the episode. So you start off with this feeling of, oh, come on, again, seriously, like, when are they going to start winning? But then the rest of the episode, you know, again, without spoiling anything, shows what real winning looks like. It's the beauty of once enemies being reconciled together and teaching each other things. You know, it's the beauty of people feeling like they don't have to hide who they are and can step out of the shadows and be vulnerable in public. You know, it's the beauty of having a positive team culture that is a culture of life that, you know, supports each other, encourages each other. You know, that's what winning looks like. It's discovering who you are, just things like that. So you're absolutely right, Daniel. That's winning at the end of the day. And I think ultimately, unfortunately, so many of us in the church have replaced replaced faithfulness with winning, right? Like we know what we're supposed to do, but that's not going to help us win. So we need to change who we are to win so that numbers increase, tides increase, you know, people's perceptions of us increase, you know, and then in so doing, we gain the world by losing our souls. And I think what Ted Lasso is doing with his team culture here is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah. It's beautiful to even think deeper, isn't it? Like, so even if you're listening to this right now, you know, I challenge you just to think about what your wins are for your life. Even for me, this is helpful, you know, like, what is it I'm trying to accomplish? And where are those markers that show me, oh, this is the Jesus way. I would like people to look at my life and go, oh, that's what forgiveness looks like, or that's what grace looks like, or that's what hospitality is, or that's what kindness looks like, or that's what advocacy is, or that's what being an ally might look like and how I could do it. Not, you know, all the other metrics of success, which are really upwardly mobile. So like whatever those are, but like at the cost of what really matters in life.
I think good to bear in mind, again, not to state the brutally obvious here, but soccer is a zero-sum game. Me winning means you losing. You losing means, well, you can tie, but whatever, not in a playoff game. You know, that has to be a winner and a loser, which is a very like anti-kingdom way of doing things, I think. What does it look like to kind of even look at these interactions and seeing? So my example, also, this sounds like I'm a super generous person. I'm not, but I want to be. So I'll talk about it as if I am. But if, say, someone's trying to scam me out of money or something and I give them money, we could argue, well, I've lost and they've won. But actually, if my posture is to be generous, I've won. And if their need is to get money, they've won. You know what I mean? So this turns it, it stops being a zero-sum interaction and actually just becomes both of us getting what we need from the interaction, or again, an opportunity to ideally experience Jesus from the interaction. And I think we're, yeah, church, I mean, culture, churches, Christianity, all these things, it's so, it feels so zero-sum. There has to be a winner and a loser. And like, there's only one winner. He is Jesus, and he's won it for all of us forever. So let's like start there. And I don't know, it's kind of helpful because I do think we're very kind of soundbitey, and it's all about kind of trying to win or lose, or, you know, owns or whatever, and clapbacks or likes or retweets or ratios. And these are all fine ways of, I realize you guys like being on Twitter and I'm not on Twitter, so it just sounds like I'm like shading you pretty hard here. But I do think just redefining what a win looks like. And again, so what does a win look like in this interaction? And if it's just like, you know what, I know more about that person now. That's all I needed. I've been able to show them a bit of who I understand Jesus to be. I'm able to reveal just what the radical love and radical inclusion and radical justice of Jesus that is present when Jesus is near, then actually that's just always a win, right? So it doesn't matter what I lose, because that's what I want from the interaction. That's the hope.
Okay, final thoughts on Ted Lasso and faith and what we do with what we could potentially do with this series. Joash?
Yeah. You know, I think so the beautiful thing about this show and the beautiful thing about our lives is that the story isn't told yet, right? Like, we don't know how, we don't know what happens next. I mean, ultimately, I think all of us have a sense that, you know, the season's going to end on a beautiful note, like it always does. You know, the story is still being told, and our story is still being told as well. So, but that being said, you know, there are some constant themes that we've seen throughout the show that we know will still hold true. We can make those assumptions. You know, Ted is going to, I think, continue being, you know, a graceful embodiment of hope in dead places. Yeah, and we've seen so much of what he's touched come to life already. So I'm genuinely interested to see the dynamic with Nate, you know, Ted's Judas, because ultimately reconciliation is also a choice. You know, like Judas in scriptures had a choice as well, and he ultimately chose not to be reconciled to Jesus. You know, it wasn't Jesus that was close to him. And we see that with Ted's posture towards Nate as well. Ted is extending his hand to be, you know, shaken. He's, you know, he's just making himself available and more vulnerable despite being hurt by him already. But, you know, Nate's the one who keeps snubbing him away. But you also start to slowly see this posture change in Nate. Like, you know, deep down inside, he wants to do the right thing.
Actually, just triggered my mind because I think a lot about Judas. Mm. And I think about when he, what, because he was sorry. Judas did want to do something about what he had done. Mm. But the thing is, they went to the wrong place. Mm. He went to the temple, and literally, like, the religious leaders go, what is this to us? Like, we can't help you. We don't care. And I feel the same thing with Nate, because he keeps going to the wrong place instead of going to Ted to be reconciled, which he, you know, we all know that Ted's going to welcome him. He keeps going to that other jerk, Rupert. Right. He's going to Rupert, and Rupert keeps like telling him the thing that is exactly the opposite thing that even he wants, right? Yes. And it reminds me a lot of Judas kind of going to the temple saying, like, help me out, and the temple going, like,
yes, for you. And if I may say so, Rupert reminds me of the serpent in the garden so much. Like, he's just got this posture of hunching over Nate and whispering into his ear and saying deceptive things that make Nate smile. But, you know, deep down inside, it's going to hurt Nate in the long term. So there's something really interesting about that relational dynamic as well, where Rupert keeps affirming these dark places in Nate's character.
Well, and everything Rupert touches turns to crap. So it's the opposite. Everything he touches turns to death. So that would be in keeping with that as well. For sure.
Absolutely.
Amazing. I will say my final thoughts on Ted Lasso are just simply this. Like, my husband has a very, very low threshold on swearing, which is why this podcast is so clean. But you're welcome, honey. I love you. Anyway, so, but he watches Ted Lasso because he loves it. So I do want to put a disclaimer out here that there is a lot of swearing in Ted Lasso. Like, the F word is plentiful, although it does sound different coming out of an English accent.
It's like poetry, honestly. It's different in England.
It also is different in England, isn't it? It's not nearly the affront that it is in America. But anyway, there's a lot of swearing, but because the show is so beautifully written, the invitation is to kind of look past it. It really is, because the characters are deeper than that, and you know where they're coming from, and you know that this is just like the veneer, but that underneath that veneer is so much depth and need and relationship possibilities and desire. And I think that itself is even in keeping with the person of Jesus, which is why, you know, so many Christians get like, they see the surface thing. They hear the F word and they go, that's it. We're out. There's nothing redeemable here, you know? And the opposite is true. The opposite is true. If you could just go a little bit deeper, if you could not allow those shallow things to get in your way and press deeper, get curious, begin to ask good questions. Like, I think that itself is its own sort of parable in, if you're going to watch Ted Lasso, you're going to have to get over your own offense. And you're going to have to move towards the characters in the story, which is kind of like the way Jesus invites us all to live.
Wow.
So those are some of my thoughts. James, final thoughts on Ted Lasso?
I know. I'll circle back to that curiosity piece. As we say, I think it's probably one of the real highlights of the show. Let's ask good questions. I feel that... we presume if you listen to this, you're at least church involved in some way. And if you're not, so incredibly glad that you stuck with us this long. But I think a lot of people that have been involved in church or religion we've got quite bad at asking questions. I think we've focused an awful lot on having the right answers. But the fact that Christianity is in the state that it is, I think shows that they aren't the right answers. Because if not, we wouldn't be in such a kind of divisive and hurtful and occasionally just incredibly cruel posture. So what does it look like to ask better questions and ask those questions from within a place of honor and respect and love? People don't owe you answers just because their lives are hard and you demand them. But to be curious and spend time with people, I just can't get enough of it. And some of the most privileged conversations I have in my life are with people whose lives are just, I can't even imagine what they have been through. And everything makes so much more sense once we understand people. So yeah, I really encourage that kind of curiosity. Be so much quicker to ask questions and to throw out answers, because there's too many answers already.
People surprise the heck out of me all the time. If you just get curious enough to ask a couple of questions, it can be a nice way to live. Couple of last minute things. Hannah McNeely is doing discussion guides for these movies and TV series. So if you're a youth leader or a church leader or something like that, we often do God at the Movies at our house, and we have a floating remote, and you can always pause the movie and we can have a chat about what you're feeling or sensing. Or, I mean, I'm not a counselor, James, so I couldn't do it for you and Ted Lasso. But anyway,
like three sessions, I swear.
But part of this season's desire is to help you bring your faith with you and just start hammering away at these weird, sacred, secular divisions we've made in our lives. Mm-hmm. And also this capacity that we have to turn our minds off and actually to invite you to turn your heart and your mind on and see what God might be saying through culture and stories and all kinds of beautiful truth. James, if you want to catch him, you're going to catch him at the Wellspring Church Live pretty much every Sunday.
That's true. Yeah, we haven't ever done a plug before. Wellspring Worship Center. You can join my mom online. She's always there and saying hello to people.
James' mom is the best, by the way. Thanks for the chocolate one more time. And then Joash, where can people find you? How can they track with you a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So two ways. At Joash P. Thomas on Twitter. I'm always on Twitter, so you could definitely find me there. But I also have a Substack called Jesus, Justice, and Joash. I'm a preacher, so I like a little alliteration. So yeah, you can find me there. And yeah, honored to get to be a part of this conversation and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Maybe you'll even hear Joash preaching at Wellspring one day soon.
Let's make it happen. Let's just have a conversation about Ted. It'll be amazing.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been wonderful. I feel like if you haven't watched Ted Lasso yet, you might want to after this. If you are watching Ted Lasso, you might want to review it and go over it again with these lenses on, see if you see what we see, and even some more stuff besides. But by whatever you do, have a conversation with somebody about how faith is informing the way that you live your life and how Jesus is better than Ted Lasso, believe it or not.